A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thank you so much for being a part of another edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. It is great to be back behind the microphone. It was great to have a couple of days off. Don't get me wrong here. I was supposed to be at the beach with my family, but Hurricane Dorian put a stop to that. We got down there Sunday afternoon. By Monday afternoon, we were told we had to evacuate and leave North Carolina. So we did. I took my wife. We didn't have a backup vacation plan, but I'm pretty proud of myself. I came up with one. Took my wife up into the mountains of Virginia's Blue Ridge for a day or two. We did some sightseeing around the state. Anyway, it was great to spend some family time. I appreciate being able to get away for a couple of days. Appreciate Tom Knighton stepping up at BearingArms.com while I was gone. But I got to tell you, it is good to be back. And just in time, too, because Congress is back in session, and that means we've got gun control on the agenda. Yes, indeed. For weeks now, we've been hearing that when Congress returns, we are going to have gun control, quote, front and center. That was the word from Mitch McConnell, right? We don't know exactly what bills Congress is going to be taking a look at. As a matter of fact, Senator Roy Blunt from Missouri said on one of the Sunday shows yesterday that, you know, he really wants to hear some guidance from President Trump, wants to know what President Trump wants so that Republicans know what they should focus on. Mitch McConnell has said, I'm not bringing anything to the floor of the Senate unless another president's going to sign it. Meanwhile, the president has been kind of vague about what it is that he wants. He's mentioned red flag laws. He's mentioned background checks, but that's about as far as he's gone here, right? So when it comes to red flag legislation, what are we likely to see from the Senate? We know that Senator Lindsey Graham has been working with Senator Richard Blumenthal from Connecticut on a bill that would give grant money to states that set up their own red flag laws. But we don't know what provisions would be required there under this legislation in the Senate. So in other words, what sort of due process protections would be required in order to get federal grant money? Would there be any restrictions on how long these red flags could last under this federal legislation? Would there be any restrictions on who could petition the court to grant one of these emergency gun violence restraining orders? Those are all big questions, and we don't know the answers yet until we see this legislation. So I think it's likely we're going to see something along those lines. The devil's in the details, though. We don't know. You know, again, what the particulars of that legislation is going to look like. And when it comes to background checks, you got basically two tracks that the Senate could work towards, right? There's the expanding who has to go through a background check. You got Manchin-Toomey, which has been around since 2013, that would basically require every commercial sale of a firearm to go through a background check. Not just retail sales now, but if you are selling one of your firearms to somebody else, that would have to go through a background check. You'd have to go through an FFL. You'd have to pay the fee and everything else. And then there's the quote-unquote universal background check measure, which is H.R. 8. It's already passed out of the House. That expands Manchin-Toomey's requirements to even temporary transfers of firearms between friends. So will we see the Senate take up a bill that would expand the universe of who has to conduct a background check, who has to go through a background check when a firearm is transferred? Or will we see something like the Fix Nix Act, maybe Fix Nix 2, that would improve the records in the National Instant Check System? Because we know that there are a lot of gaps. And so you've seen, I think the Senator Cornyn was the chief sponsor of the Fix Nix Act, which again gave grant money to states to improve their record submissions to the National Instant Check System. Will we see something along those lines? That, I think, is far more likely to garner support of Republican lawmakers and maybe even a couple of Democrats in the Senate, as opposed to H.R. 8 or Manchin-Toomey, things that would, again, put more restrictions on legal gun owners right now. And, you know, listen, Americans, we've seen the polls, Americans, you know, broadly support these quote-unquote universal background check measures. We talked with Kareem Shia last week on Cam and Company about why the support is so high when you poll it, and then when you actually put it up to a vote of the people, the support actually plummets. And it's because most people don't understand. Most people don't have to understand. If you're not a gun owner, you don't care about the intricacies of these laws. right? You just say, well, yeah, you should have to go through a background check if you get a gun. Yeah, that was good to me. When you start filling in some of these details here, you say, okay, well, do you think that, you know, your neighbor should go to prison or face a federal felony for selling a firearm to your other neighbor? You've known both of these ladies for 20 years. Neither one of them are, criminals. Neither one of them are prohibited persons. Should your neighbor, Gail, be facing a felony charge for selling a firearm to Betsy two doors down? Because under HR 8, that's exactly what would happen. Or if you transferred a firearm, you gave your cousin a firearm, one of your old shotguns. You said, you know, he's been eyeing that for a couple of years. He really likes it. And, I think I'm going to go ahead and give it to him for Christmas this year. Should that be a federal felony? Most Americans would say no, right? I don't think most Americans are on board with criminalizing something that is commonly done by law-abiding Americans for a variety of lawful purposes, whether it's, again, it's a temporary transfer for hunting or self-defense or just even a private sale of a firearm. Now, there is pressure on President Trump to support those expansions. You've got everybody from Senator Manchin from West Virginia to Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who came out and said, oh, we need to do something about these stranger-to-stranger sales. We got to stop strangers selling firearms to other strangers. They should have to go through a background check. I've heard Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick say this a few times. I've not heard him explain how the government's going to know beforehand or even during that one of these transfers would be taking place. Imagine, if you will, for a second, federal government says, we got to do something. We got to do something about underage drinking. When you go to the grocery store and you buy a six-pack of beer, you got to show your ID, right? Make sure you're 21. When you go to a bar and you get a cocktail, you got to show your ID. You got to make sure you're 21. Well, we're going to require you to get ID from anybody in your home before you offer them an alcoholic beverage. So if you're having a cookout, maybe over Labor Day, and you want to offer your neighbor Tom a beer, well, you gotta see Tom's ID first. If you don't, that's a felony. Now, Congress could pass such a law, but how would they enforce it? How does the government know that you're offering Tom a beer? I mean, maybe they're listening on Alexa, but no, I'm just teasing. Well, I don't know if I am or not. Anyway, how would they know when these private transfers of alcohol are taking place? They wouldn't, any more than the federal government has no idea when private transfers of firearms are taking place. The only way you could attempt to enforce this would be after the fact. And at that point, you're probably dealing with somebody who's involved in a violent crime. And they're probably facing more serious charges than, receiving a firearm without a background check. To me, this is a quote unquote, do something solution. That really doesn't do much at all. We talked again with Kareem Shia from Open Source Defense last week about another proposal that Kareem has that would actually increase the privacy of gun owners. You would not need to have a gun registry or gun licensing. In fact, the government wouldn't even know what firearm is being transferred, but would still allow for increased participation among private gun owners when it comes to transferring firearms. I'd encourage you to check that out. It's something that I think Congress maybe should be talking more about, but they're not. And gun control advocates aren't talking about it at all, because what they want to do is just expand the existing system and try to wrap up as many legal gun owners as possible. So what happens if Congress does pass gun control in the next week or two? You know, one of the things that we've seen around the country over the past year or so is the establishment of these Second Amendment sanctuary communities at the county level and municipality level. And really across the country, we've seen a number of locations say, hey, you know what, if you pass any more federal gun control laws that we consider to be unconstitutional, we're not going to enforce them within our borders. I spoke with I kind of want to call him the father of the Second Amendment Sanctuary Movement. He would not say that he's the father, because there are a lot of other folks involved. But Effingham County, Illinois, was the first county that I'm aware of, to adopt a Second Amendment sanctuary resolution. And David Campbell is the commissioner there in Effingham County who really spearheaded this effort. And he's been in touch with folks, again, from coast to coast ever since, who want to know a little bit more about what it means to adopt one of these Second Amendment sanctuary resolutions. So I spoke with David about what he thinks the impact might be on the Second Amendment sanctuary movement if we do see gun control legislation come out of Congress in the next few weeks. David Campbell, it is good to talk with you again, sir. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me on, Cam. I appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I've been thinking about you and the Second Amendment sanctuary movement for a while now because, you know, one of the things that we're seeing right now with Congress, they want to, quote, do something about gun control. And I have a feeling that anything that they come up with is not going to be warmly received by too many of these Second Amendment sanctuaries around the country. And I'm curious, do you, well, first of all, let me, before we get too far down the field, where is the Second Amendment sanctuary movement right now? We've not seen as many headlines. People aren't writing as many stories about the movement, but are you still hearing from, you know, local lawmakers, county officials around the country who are curious or interested in becoming a Second Amendment sanctuary?
Absolutely, we are. We aren't getting the big media blast that we got, you know, starting out back. Well, it's been a year ago, April, when it actually started. We kind of lost some of the media blast there, but every week I get at least one, if not more, request for our sanctuary resolution. Either somebody asking me directly, or one of the other counties that we still correspond with. There are other counties reaching out to them, so it's still a growing movement. We're fighting hard to keep our Second Amendment alive. I know we here in Illinois, our big fight right now is going to be the FOID is the next thing, the FOID card, which we know is unconstitutional. It's working its way up through the courts, going into Illinois Supreme Court. We hope that gets to the Illinois Supreme Court before October when our legislators get back, because we know it's going to be a big fight once they get back, and they're going to start attacking all the Second Amendment rights, not only the FOID. So we'd like to get that heard hopefully before October when they get back in. Overall, yes, the movement is still growing. Talked to several people. Not in Illinois, we're a little over 70 counties now. We're 102 counties total. And we were a little over 70 counties and municipalities that have joined on the sanctuary movement. And nationwide, Scott Prevett has really done a good job mapping that out for us. Last count, I think we're a little over 500 total municipalities and counties throughout the United States that have actually joined. And it's kind of, honestly, Cam, it's kind of a two-part thing. The first part is us establishing our counties or our municipalities as a Second Amendment sanctuary, which means we want to create a safe haven for people that will responsibly own and bear arms and follow the law. That's the whole thing behind this. We want to protect our Second Amendment rights. The second part of it is once we pass that, we want to make sure that our state's attorneys and our sheriffs will support us on that and not prosecute. And to date in Illinois, I think we're around 20 to 30, right around the 20 to 30 county mark where state's attorneys and sheriffs had stood up and said, we will not prosecute unconstitutional. I mean, they're not going to go after any unconstitutional laws. So we feel like we're really safe here in Effingham County. We know we are with our current state's attorney and sheriff.
I got to tell you, first of all, let's back up to that 500 figure that you just mentioned, because that is staggering, David. I had no idea that there were that many communities. I know that this is a nationwide thing, but you're right. You know, you all are still growing, you know, even although the media is not paying as much attention to it these days. And then you get into, you know, what this actually means, right? So you put this resolution on the books, and now you start talking with local law enforcement, be it the sheriff, be it the state's attorney or the local district attorney. And, you know, for instance, Beto O'Rourke's out there right now. He's one of the folks running for president who says, oh, you know what, we need a national gun license. And if you don't have this national gun license, you'd be a criminal, right? You'd be in illegal possession of this firearm. Under a quote-unquote Second Amendment sanctuary, let's say in Effingham County with your state's attorney, how would that work exactly? Would it be just like we see with, you know, ICE and the city of San Francisco? Well, if you guys want to enforce your federal laws, you're more than happy to do it, but we're not going to help you out with that. So if we had a quote-unquote, you know, nationwide federal gun license, do you see that, you know, playing out in Effingham County as the state's attorney telling, you know, whatever, I guess, DOJ, look, if y'all want to try to enforce your gun licenses at the federal level, go for it. But that's not going to be a prosecutable offense here. And we're not going to lift a finger to help you guys go after the folks that we consider to be, you know, residents who are exercising their constitutional rights.
Exactly what I see, Cam. That's you hit it spot on. I think that's and I like to equate it, our group kind of likes to equate it to the recent laws that were passed here in Illinois to allow cannabis. We had medical marijuana was legalized back a few years ago, and now Illinois is legalizing recreational marijuana. We equate it to that. Federal law doesn't allow it. And, you know, so how are they able to do that, but yet, you know, they're trying to bring all these unconstitutional laws to us on the Second Amendment. I think our state's attorneys and our sheriff's going to take a firm stand and not prosecute at all any unconstitutional laws, at least in here, like I say, here in Illinois. And we're seeing that going across a lot of Illinois now. Like I say, we've got 20 to 30, I think, at least that have come out and spoken publicly. And with the elections coming up, I think you're going to even see more of them coming out and saying it because, you know, they want the support of the people that own the firearms and are, you know, that are trying to live by the Second Amendment and the other constitutional rights that we have.
So outside of Chicago, this is a winning issue for politicians and elected officials.
Yeah. I mean, that's where we hear most of the noise coming out of Chicago. I mean, there's even Democratic legislators down here that are fighting for our rights. So it's mainly up in the Chicago area, Northern Illinois. Although we've had some of the collar counties looking at doing a resolution up there, and we actually had a township up there in the collar counties of Chicago actually pass one. So we're even getting into the townships now, and that's, you know, it's basically the way it works in Illinois is, you know, you have your state government and your county, and then you go into the townships, so, and then the municipalities. So we're happy to see some of the townships. If the counties won't do it, the townships are doing it, and again, strength in numbers. The more we can get, better off we're going to be in the long run. And they know we're not going away. The fight's on. We're here to stay. They know we're not going away.
Well, let me ask you this, David. You know, if you've already had 500 counties and municipalities around the country adopt these Second Amendment sanctuary resolutions without any new gun control laws coming out of Congress, what do you think would happen to the movement if we did see Congress passed gun control legislation and President Trump signed it into law?
Oh, I think you'd see it grow even faster. I think you'd start seeing the new media blast that we got before. I think you're going to see that happen again. I think you would see a lot of, I mean, we're seeing, you know, two different counties or municipalities right now. I think you'd see that double or even triple, you know, asking how they can pass resolutions. And the resolution's the first step. That's really to get the attention of the legislators to let them know, because it's really non-binding. It's just to let them know that we're watching, that we want our rights protected and whatnot. The next step would be an ordinance that actually is law, and then we would have to pass some local laws. I think you might see that happen, and then they would be challenged, possibly have to be challenged in court. But I think you might see that next step happen if they did pass them on a federal level. That some of the municipalities and the counties would probably bind together and pass some laws that says that, you know, we're sanctuary, leave our Second Amendment rights alone, and it'd probably be taken up in court. But I think you're definitely going to see a big, big onslaught of counties and states coming in and taking a hard stand because, you know, we don't want our rights messed with.
Absolutely. And I, you know, it seems pretty clear to me that we are witnessing right now the beginning of this movement and not the end of the Second Amendment sanctuary movement in this country.
Absolutely. And it takes time. I know, you know, we discuss that a lot, and some people get a little discouraged because it takes so much time. And we do a lot of town halls, and we just did one in Springfield, Sangamon County here a couple months ago. It takes time to get all these together and resources, but it's worth it. You don't want to sit on the couch and wait for these people to take away your rights. We encourage people to get out there and stand, talk to your neighbors, talk to your family, talk to anybody. Get them out there, get them involved, and let them know, you know, your rights are being stripped away. And if they take your Second Amendment rights, they're not going to stop there. It's going to keep going. So we just encourage people to come to these town halls, and we've had some good success with these town halls educating people. And, you know, and a lot of them are starting to take stands that we, you know, we didn't dream that some of these counties like Sangamon and some of these are, which is Springfield, our capital here, are starting to take the hard stands and getting groups of people together. So it's in the infancy stage, and but it is growing, and we're happy with the 500 we're seeing across the nation. But I think you're going to see that grow even more. Again, probably not quite as rapidly as you would if Congress passed some kind of type of legislation on gun control. And it depends on what that legislation is how aggressive I think people would get. But you're definitely not seeing the last of it, that's for sure. I think people are ready to take the stand. I know they are. I mean, I talk to people every day that are very passionate about their rights.
Well, listen, David, again, I can't thank you enough for coming on the program. Thank you for all that you're doing, sir. And I look forward to catching up with you again. Maybe by the next time we talk, you'll have 600 counties and municipalities around the country.
That's our next goal. We hope we have that, at least that, or maybe more. And hopefully we'll know something on this Floyd bill for Illinois, too, by the here in the next few weeks. So, again, appreciate you having me. Good luck. And I hope all your listeners are out there are going to fight the fight and keep their rights alive.
Yes, sir. David Campbell, join us, a commissioner there in Effingham County, Illinois, on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Let's get to our deal of the day, our hero of the day, our good deed of the day as well. Our plea deal of the day comes from Chicago. By the way, before we get to the plea deal, look at this headline. This is above the fold, front page story, Chicago Tribune today. Who's watching? More people licensed to carry guns in Illinois are using them, but oversight is still lacking. That's right. They're going after the right to carry in Illinois right now. And they note that there have been two concealed carry holders who've been charged with murder since the state adopted its right to carry laws back in 2014. They note that there have been, I believe, 62 cases that they found where individuals have who are concealed carry holders have used their firearm. Now, in some cases, these are honest to goodness defensive gun uses. In other cases, there was a criminal discharge of a firearm, an accidental discharge of a firearm. Two cases, there were actually individuals charged with murder. And the Chicago Tribune, again, big front page story about concealed carry holders in Illinois. And the idea is how dangerous they are. 0.02% at most of concealed carry holders in Illinois, according to the Chicago Tribune's database, have been involved in any sort of incident involving a firearm. 0.02%. Less than one half, less than one quarter of 1% of the concealed carry holders. But that's a front page story for the Chicago Tribune. Meanwhile, the Chicago Sun-Times has this story. Man wanted for murder in West Side shooting. And as it turns out, 23-year-old Lee Davis is not a concealed carry holder there in the state of Illinois. What he is a guy with a criminal history who is now wanted for murder. Wanted in the death of 34-year-old Neil David Sumrall, according to Chicago police. Sumrall and a woman shot on Iowa Street back on August 23rd. Sumrall was struck seven times. Woman struck three times. 28-year-old woman listed in critical condition. Sumrall was pronounced dead. Davis is the second person now charged in that shooting. 18-year-old Antoine Lashley was arrested August 29th in connection with that shooting. He was free on bond when he was arrested. Yeah, he was out on bond for an earlier weapons charge, May 20th of this year. Officers allegedly saw Lashley walking and holding his jacket pocket there in the city of Chicago saw him throw a handgun to the ground before he took off running. He was arrested nearby, charged with aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. Meanwhile, Davis's warrant issued August 27th. And according to the Chicago Sun-Times, Davis's criminal history includes a 2014 conviction for unauthorized use of a weapon. He was sentenced to 6 months in prison, then was released after serving, getting time served, basically. And then he served 18 months of probation, which the Chicago Sun-Times says court records show he completed, quote, unsatisfactorily. How can you How do you complete probation unsatisfactorily? I mean, if you're not satisfied, then keep on probation. But again, this is the existing system right now in Chicago. And the Chicago Tribune, focusing on the 300,000 plus concealed carry holders who aren't driving violent crime in Chicago, rather than focusing on individuals like Antoine Ashley and Lee Davis, who allegedly are responsible for at least one murder and one shooting. And again, most of the crime in Chicago is being driven by folks who are well known to law enforcement. They're well known to the criminal justice system. They're well known to the good people in bad neighborhoods who have to live with these jackasses each and every day and the mayhem that they create. But the violence in Illinois and the violence in Chicago is not driven by concealed carry holders, no matter how much the Chicago Tribune might wish it were so. Now, today's hero of the day from Houston, Texas, where a neighbor shot and killed a dog attacking a boy in Northwest Houston. We don't have a ton of detail about this story. What we do know is that this was early Friday, about 7:30 in the morning, when the dog attacked this child, according to the Harris County Precinct 1 Constable's Office. A neighbor happened to spot this attack, pulled out a gun, shot the dog. Dog died. The boy suffered a non-life-threatening leg injury, was taken to a hospital for nearby evaluation. I love this line from the Houston Chronicle. Quote, deputies are working to identify the shooter. It's not clear if they'll face any charges. What charges would they be facing? I just out of curiosity, if you're going to, I mean, that's like one of those boilerplate lines you just throw in there. No, it's not clear if he's facing any charges. Animal cruelty? I mean, again, the dog was attacking the kid. The guy shot the dog in defense of the kid. I am both a dog lover, and I'm very fond of children, specifically my own. And I can tell you, if a neighbor shot a dog that was attacking one of my kids, I would not want that neighbor to face charges, even if it was one of my dogs. So I suspect that this guy is not going to be facing any charges, but the Houston Chronicle, you know, better safe than sorry, I suppose. All right, let's get to our good deed of the day. This one, a citizen. I guess we're not going to see too many of these stories like this coming out of California anymore. Click on Detroit. It says a citizen helped officers foil an inmate's plan to escape custody at a rest stop during a prisoner transport there in the state of Michigan. 28-year-old Antoine Simmons of Detroit is supposed to be in prison until 2037 for armed robbery and felony firearms offenses there in Wayne County. He was being transported from one prison to another. Actually, he was being transported from a prison to a Macomb County for a court appearance. Officer stopped at a rest stop because one of the officers had to use the bathroom. While the officer was inside, Simmons told the other officer he too had to use the facility. Second officer retrieved a portable urinal for the prisoner, opened the side door of the van to hand it over. Simmons had loosened his belly chains, apparently, and leapt out of the officer, backed him up against another vehicle, tried to grab the officer's handgun, according to Click on Detroit. And that is when a citizen stepped in, helped the officer restrain Simmons until the first officer returned from the restroom. Simmons now going to be facing more charges thanks to the attempted escape. One officer did suffer a minor injury, but looks like he's going to be okay. And thanks to that citizen for being in the right place at the right time and willing and able to do the right thing. Thank you for that very, very good deed. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. We are going to be keeping a close eye on everything going on Capitol Hill. Make sure that you tune in tomorrow. We'll have the latest on that, as well as the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. If you like this in a podcast form, you can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Spotify, on Stitcher, at townhall.com's podcast page. You can also subscribe to Town Hall Media on YouTube for the latest Bearing Arms Cam and Company in video form. Have a great rest of your day. Thanks again for being a part of the program. Thanks for spreading the word. And we'll see you here soon with another edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company.